You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order? Ah, I see. The special it is. We will be there to deliver ASAP. Cosmic Pizza Podcast, special delivery.
Hello, welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. I'm Sean, and with me today are
Dan from the UK
and Paul from the UK.
And we're here to serve you a slice of life. And it's exciting. We have got a special guest. And if you can't tell by the title of this episode, we're talking about Muppets with Steve from the A Play on Nerds Podcast Network. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's our pleasure. Okay. So since I'm hosting, I'm going to now turn it over to Paul and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Sean. You can go back to bed now.
Appreciate it.
We'll wake you up at the end when we need the end credits doing.
Wow. Perfect. It disappeared really fast. That's crazy.
I've never seen a man so desperate to get off the mic.
For real.
It's because I don't know anything about the Muppets.
Then you're our target audience. Like, that's exactly the thing. Yeah. You're who we're here for.
You will know everything about the Muppets at the end of this podcast.
Well, I am learning quite a bit by listening to Steve's podcast that he hosts with Jarman. So, actually, before we get into it, why don't you give us a little bit of a background, Steve, about your podcast history?
Well, about 7 years ago, my best buddy Jarman, who grew up with, we've known each other since we were 10 years old, came to my brother's wedding in Georgia. And in a night of drunken talking, him and I kind of went into this mode and we started talking about this really insane concept. And we probably riffed on this for about 40 minutes, a little boozed up. And the idea was She Grover Cleveland. So the whole idea was a beautiful, like, model's female body with the head of former US President Grover Cleveland. And it was basically like, I don't know, would you sleep with She Grover Cleveland? How much would it cost to sleep with? Would you have to be paid to sleep with She Grover Cleveland? For $3 billion, would you sleep with She Grover Cleveland every night? And it just went on and on and on. And someone said, you guys should record this because some of this is insane. And we went, yeah, we should. So about 3 months later, the Play on Nerds podcast was born. We did that for 137 or 138 episodes. And at the end, we were just kind of tired and running out of plot points to talk about. The show was hard to build, and we just didn't have the time to put into it. So I said, well, let's take the best parts of the show and break them out. Let's take the parts we love the most or our audience seems to respond to the most and make them their own little thing. So we had the birth of three minor podcasts then. The Muppet Trek podcast, where we dive deep into Jarman and I's love of Star Trek and the Muppets by reviewing The Muppet Show and Star Trek, the original series. Eventually, we will move on to other Jim Henson productions and later Star Trek productions, and I figured out that we have enough Jim Henson runway for about 8 years of podcasts before we need to have some very difficult talks about what we're going to cover, because there's just so much more Star Trek than Muppet stuff. It's just the reality. So we're good through the end of Fraggle Rock, and then we have a tough discussion, but I would say that's like 8 years from now, so we're good. we've got some time to figure it out. The other one is Sappy Crap, where Jarman and I just kind of talk about growing up and funny stories that only the two of us can tell because we were there and we've been through each other's adolescence. And the third one that's a little bit more sporadic is Real Opposition, where we pick a movie that is widely panned. Jarman defends it, I destroy it, and then I try to write a sequel to this terrible movie that fixes it. And the next one coming up should be Police Academy 6, but I don't know when that's coming out, so I won't promise you anything.
No promise necessary. I know that the three of us here over at Cosmic Pizza devour all episodes of the A Play on Nerds podcast network episodes. Always looking forward to a new show. And whenever they come out, it's great. We talk about you guys all the time. In fact, thanks. In our last recording, we gave you guys a special shout out.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. mostly Jarman in the lookalike episode, but...
Fair.
It'll be a fun surprise for you guys
to okay. listen to. Well, excellent. Now I have something to look forward to.
Where can our listeners find your podcasts anyway?
You can find us at playonnerds.com. You can search Muppet Trek, Sappy Crap, Real Opposition, or A Play on Nerds, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Lord Jarman is our social media guru and coordinator. So I'm sure we're about a dozen more places that I'm unaware of. Sounds we always say your chosen podcast platform is our typical go-to.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's amazing that you've been going for so long. I mean, that's the thing, because I can remember sort of listening to your early shows and then going back and starting from scratch and going and then working my way back through. And I think you guys were the sort of like a big inspiration for me to get into podcasting more as well, because I heard Jarman on the 10 Forward podcast doing the Star Trek reviews and things. And he mentioned then that he was going to be doing another show. Oh, great! Okay, so I'll listen to that. And then eventually I came onto the 10 Forward podcast as well. And I've been listening ever since then. And it still gets me now when I look at my podcast catcher and I look down and I see Muppet Trek. I go, yes. And, it's great. There's another one. Woo-hoo! Brilliant. I mean, because you guys are so easy to listen to. It's just amazing. I mean, the stuff you come out with is hilarious anyway, especially with the Sappy Crap stuff. Some of the things you guys have done.
Oh, man. The best stories that come out of Sappy Crap are the ones we're not planning on telling. So we're unable to filter them beforehand, and then it just all comes out.
Yes. That's the best.
Yeah, when you literally hear me say, well, I didn't know I was going to be telling this story, so I'll make up a name. Bobo is there. And I've.
And it's amazing how many stories you tell are relatable, even over here in the UK. I mean, obviously, it's not just a...
teenage angst is a universal language.
Oh, definitely.
There's no barrier for teenage angst.
Exactly. No barrier, including time. Because, I mean, I'm obviously a lot older than you guys. So, and I can still relate to a lot of the stuff that you're talking about then that is still applicable over here.
But
back in the 70s and things, so even the 80s. So, it's great. It's really good. So, please, and I'm so glad to hear that you have enough material to be going on for another 8 years, because that's me... quite happily listening to podcasts for the next 8 years, providing, of course, you carry on with them.
Well, it's an easy enough format, and that was really my goal in building it, because I'm sort of the writer, we'll say, for the show, for lack of a better term, was to come up with a format that we could rinse, repeat, and push through with minimal prep, not no prep, but minimal prep, because time is always the obstacle. For me, with two kids, and Jarman with his crazy voiceover career and odd hours, time's the obstacle. So all my goal was to, what can I come up with that we can prep quickly, doesn't put Jarman out. So the goal was to make it a short format, a quick format that could be executed for years to come.
But you say minimal research, but my goodness, the stuff that you find and come out with for the crossover section in the Muppet Trek is amazing.
That's the one part that takes me time, depending on the host. Some hosts, there's an easy, quick connection, something, a straw to grab, a movie someone was in that you recognize. Some of these people, though.
The obscure stuff that you come out with, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And some of them are reaching, but they're always there.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate the reaching ones because they're hilarious.
Yeah. You got to do a little stretching for those.
So, moving on to the Muppets, give us this potted history that you've put together. I remember seeing them back in the 70s when obviously they were first coming out.
Well, that's the golden age.
Exactly, and the amazing thing, of course, is I assume, because it feels about right, that they came out over here at the same time as they were coming out over in the States.
You guys got them earlier. actually, and that's why we still do the Muppet Show in the UK broadcast order, because you guys got it first. For the rest of the show, we will do the Muppets in the UK broadcast order for that reason.
I need to find that list, because it is nothing like what is on Disney Plus.
What Disney Plus has is the actual production order, I believe, which is not the same from the US release order, which is not the same from the UK release order.
Right. I need to find the order, because it makes no sense whatsoever.
Nope. It doesn't. You're right. There is such a thing as Muppet continuity, and I can talk a little bit about it, but it's rough. It's a rough game.
Yeah. There's obviously there's characters that are being introduced in one episode that should be there, you know, continuing onwards, and not when you go to the first one and then realize, oh no, hang on, this is episode 5.
Yeah, and there's a whole subplot about Scooter's uncle owning the theater, and that's what pushes Kermit to make some really bad choices at times, but it's sporadic and intermittent, and it's because it was originally kind of like this arc, and then it got split up.
Yeah,
but the funny thing is,
they were talking about running gags, and I'll come more onto this a bit later when you go through the history and things, because in the Muppet track you mentioned Don Knotts, the end of Don Knotts' episode being edited. Mm-hmm. And maybe something had been taken out. So I thought, I know Don Knotts now, but I like Don Knotts, so I watched him way back when. And I thought, I'll just skip ahead of that and see where that is. And oh my goodness, not only did they just cut out a piece, it was like 5 or 6 words that were cut out. Not his, it was actually another character's. But they were cut out with a pair of scissors. I mean, it was just like, it went from, you know, you over here, hello, okay, and now we're going to, and we're going to do this. Well, there was a section that just went missing, and they stuck it together, didn't fade it or bring it back in or even take the whole thing out. You know, they just cut it straight out.
There's a couple other things like that in the Disney remaster. There's some digitizing and cleanup sort of stuff that happens where you'll notice that characters' eyes get blue almost. And that's just a digital overfocusing of the light in the shot, and it causes basically a blue halo. So even my daughter came out and she went, "Why are Kermit's eyes blue?" And I went, "Don't worry about it, sweetie. It'll be fine. It's still better than anything I've had before. So this is great."
Yes. So anyway, yes.
There's 120 episodes for what's on Disney Plus. 20 received, 2 got cut entirely. One for copyright issues, one for the fact that the guy was a pedophile. And 18 have rights issues caught up, but that they were able to at least cut enough to get it out. And the Lullaby to Birdland is a very prime example of one of those that they just couldn't get the rights resolved.
Ah, right. Okay.
And that's what did the crux of that whole cool guy wearing shades joke for that episode.
Yeah, that's right. It made no sense. But at the same time, they cut out a piece that related to it when they didn't need to, if that was the case. But
right. It was in theory making reference to a song that the audience didn't hear. So someone was like, "Won't that confuse them?" Someone else should have said, "It doesn't matter. It's all confusing. Just put it in."
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to give us a quick history of.
So Sean, this one's for you, since you don't know anything about the Muppets. This one's for you.
I know very little. I know that I watched it as a kid. I had wallpaper in my bedroom when I was like 3.
Wow, that's awesome. I watched
the Muppet Babies and Fraggle Rock.
Oh, man.
But other than that, I don't know very much.
I mean, that's true. Fraggle Rock was a Canadian television co-production. You probably saw it before I ever got it. Yeah. Between HBO and Canada One or something. I don't think it's called that anymore. Whatever the station was at the time, it was a co-production.
That's cool.
So Jim went to college in the mid-50s, and he decided that he wanted to work in television. So he went down to a local network and saw who they were hiring, and they were looking for a puppet act for one of their kids' shows. So Jim goes down to the library. He checks out a few books on making puppets. He makes his first puppet, goes down and auditions, and he gets a job. So suddenly he's in TV. He just wanted to work in television. He had no idea puppets was going to be how he did it. After a bunch of appearances of him and his future wife, Jane, they got their own show called Sam and Friends. And a lot of sort of the seeds for future characters in the Muppet Show live in Sam and Friends. The act became big local celebrities. Suddenly, Jim's getting asked to do commercials. And one of the earliest and most notable is Wilkin and Watkins for Wilkins Coffee. A very Looney Tune-ish, where if you don't drink Wilkins, you get blown up or hurt in some terrible way. Jim and Jane do a ton of commercial work and a ton of appearances. They win a local Emmy. Suddenly, they get huge contract with Purina. And Rolf the dog comes into existence as Purina's spokesdog. In 65, Jim gets an Oscar nomination for a short film called Timepiece, and he gets thrust in the national spot, and Spotlight. Now they're not only appearing on local shows, they're on the Ed Sullivan Show. They're taking bigger and bigger commercial contracts, and this is when we get our first Muppet licensed toys in the mid-60s, believe it or not. Jim starts taking on some bigger projects. He does TV specials. He gets approached by the Children's Television Workshop, who want to use his Muppets for their new children's programming called Sesame Street. After a few more TV specials, Jim starts looking for someone to finance a new show. And he shops it to a bunch of producers here in the U.S., none of which will give him the money he needs to make the show the way he wants. So he goes over to the U.K. and hooks up with Lou Grade, a producer and financier, who says, yeah, I'll give you the money. And that is why the U.K. got the Muppet Show before the U.S. did. They're the ones that paid for it. After a few more TV specials, he starts to... We get the Muppet Show and other classics like Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. We get the Muppet Movie and John Denver Christmas specials. The Muppets are at their height at this time. Things get a little bit crazier because he has this fame, and that's when we get weirder, more sort of side projects like Fraggle Rock. He sets his sights on doing a movie. He makes The Dark Crystal. And this is the first time that Jim tasted failure. Audiences didn't get it. No one knew what to do with it. They didn't know how to advertise it, and it spooked Jim to the point where he redirected all the pre-production for Labyrinth, which was originally going to be centered around puppet characters only and cast in human characters, because he was so spooked by Dark Crystal that he thought he had to have human anchors to make Labyrinth work. We get some more Muppet successes with Muppets Take Manhattan, Muppet Babies, Follow That Bird. In 86, we get Labyrinth, which is moderately successful, but has since become a huge cult classic. Jim gets to do some more serious fare with things like The Storyteller. It's a mixed bag in 1989. Jim Henson Hour was pretty much a critical failure with, I think, 5 episodes not even ever airing. But the Creature Shop built the effects for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which put them on the sort of on the map for creature effects for other projects. After this, we get Muppets 3D at Disney. There's talks of a merger. This is even talks of a year-long Muppet takeover of the Disney parks, where they were going to redesign rides and put in Muppet animatronics and existing rides as sort of the celebration of the Muppets coming over. This did not happen because in May 16, 1990, after suffering from a terrible chest cold and traveling with his daughter, Jim put off going to go see a doctor. Some people in the end of his life, some people say he was a self-described Buddhist. He also grew up in a Christian Science home who don't believe in modern medicine really, though he was not practicing. There's a lot of theories for why he didn't go. But they went, they found abscesses in his lungs and severe pneumonia. They treated aggressively for antibiotics. But by the time they got the infection under control, his body didn't have anything left to give. He left the following instructions for his service. He wrote 2 letters, one to family and friends, and then he wrote one to his children. This is the one to family and friends. I suggest you first have a nice, friendly little service of some kind. It would be lovely if some people would sing would do a song or two, some of which should be quite happy and joyful. It would be nice if some of my close friends would say a few nice, happy words about how much we enjoyed doing this stuff together. Incidentally, I'd love to have a Dixieland band play at this function and end with a rousing version of When the Saints Go Marching In. Have a wonderful time in life, everybody. It feels strange writing this kind of thing while I'm still alive, but it wouldn't be easy to do after I go. Jim. They did, in fact, have a Dixieland band. All these things came to pass at his funeral. After his death, the Henson Company saw some ups and downs. We get things like Muppet Christmas Carol, Muppet Treasure Island. But then we get things like Muppets Tonight, which was not so great. After a lower middling success in Muppets Tonight, the Henson family sold the Henson Company for an incredible amount, for $660 million to a German production company called EMTV. We get a few weird entries in this time, including lesser known things like Kermit the Swamp Years and It's a Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie. And then in 2003, the Hensons bought back the company for only $86 million. So they made an incredible profit, only to turn around and sell the IP for the Muppets to Disney a year later for $75 million. So they effectively sold the Jim Henson Company for $660 million and then got it back for $11 million, effectively. Like, it's just insane how much money these people made. And then since then, the Muppets have had mixed success. We have low points like Muppet Wizard of Oz and the Lady Gaga Thanksgiving special, and higher points like the 2011 The Muppets with Jason Segel and its follow-up Muppets Most Wanted. The Muppets' recent show was short-lived and difficult to watch, but other ventures have proven a little bit better, like Julie's Green Room on Netflix, and Muppets Now on Disney Plus has its moments. As a longtime fan, I can confidently say the Muppets aren't going anywhere. But I can also confidently say the best days are behind us. Ahead of them lies only ruin, and woe to ye who enter here.
Ouch.
Yeah.
How do you really feel?
Yeah, that pretty much spells it out. The most recent offerings from Disney Plus show a bleak future for the Muppets and a company that doesn't quite know what to do with the IP.
Is that because you are now older and therefore you see it in a different light? I mean, do you think a younger Steve would actually not really be bothered about what was coming out so long as it was the Muppets?
I don't know. It's very different now. The characters, you know, aside from the fact that almost nobody is originally voiced anymore, I can think of one Muppet that is originally voiced at this point, and that's Gonzo. That's it. Because Rizzo would also, but like Steve Whitmire is fired at this point, so he's gone, and he did a bunch of voices from the older cast. Kermit is different. If you watch The Muppet Show, Kermit is sassy. He is a little bit mean. He's not afraid to put his actors in his place. And this is one of the reasons that Steve Whitmire was released from his contract, is because he'd kind of turned Kermit into this like whiny always victim. If you watch the most recent movies, Kermit is a whiny, almost always victim. And he's not the punchy, saucy Kermit that Jim made. So in that respect, I don't know. Maybe I notice it because I'm older, but it's different. It just is. The character is different. The dynamic is different. And it doesn't carry the same way because of that.
Yeah, I mean, we see that over here. There's a character over here that Dan will know, maybe not so much Sean. Basil Brush, he's a fox. And he's a puppet. He's been around since the 70s, a long time. But of course, the original person who operated him has obviously either left or passed away. I think he passed away, actually. And somebody else took over him, and his voice is different. And his catchphrase is different. And it's not the same to me. But to anybody else who sees him now, that's Basil Brush. You know, and he's still got right. The same wit, the same, he's quite... when he's on adult TV programs, he becomes a lot more sort of adult. And then when he's a kid's entertainer, he's just purely for the kids. But he does have a little bit of innuendo now and again thrown in. So he can be a bit cheeky.
Sean, have you ever heard of Basil Brush? Because I have never heard of Basil Brush.
I've never heard of that.
And I just looked him up, and he looks adorable. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Looks adorable.
Oh, he's brilliant. I mean, he's not controversial at all. One of the only 70s entertainers that you can actually like these days. without having some sort of controversy behind him. It's the fact that he's still going. He pops up now and again. He was on an adult TV program last night. He was definitely brilliant. You know, the guy who's doing him has still got the same, he's got the essence of the character correct, but his voice is just slightly different, and it's not quite close enough to how it was originally to make it, you notice the difference.
Yeah. See, I miss those days for Kermit when, the Muppets were on, they did a 60 Minutes Dateline thing and went on Meet the Press and did Good Morning America, and it wasn't just when they were promoting a movie, like they were on as guests. And I think those days are unfortunately behind us.
Yeah. And Kermit was my favorite character on Sesame Street when he was the newsman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that was my favorite part of it.
I think he is the only crossover character. There might be one other, but in all of Sesame Street Muppets, he is the only crossover character.
So I was showing my wife because we only recently got Disney Plus, and I said, look, they've got all the Muppet shows on here. And I'm going through them, and I'm showing her all the people who have been on it. And she looks at me and goes, I don't know any of these people. They're all old. Old. Well, I know what you mean by old, but this is the 70s. So, and she goes, yeah, I know you'll get a lot of 1970s performers in there. I said, but some of these, Bob Hope. I mean, yeah, he was around in the 70s, but he was more active earlier on. You know, he was big name from the past that was still going. George Burns was a little bit harder to defend. I said, well, yeah, he was about 80 then, and he died when he was 100, wasn't he, or something. So, I mean, she doesn't know who George Burns is. She doesn't know who Don Knotts is. She doesn't know all of these American entertainers that I grew up with. Only a five-year difference in between us, but
well, there's
different things to her.
There was a hot streak in the mid-70s when the Muppet Show was in production, where there was this second wave for these comics that were from like the 40s and 50s, these old school punchline, truly tell a joke comics, like type of comics don't exist anymore. And there was this resurgence. And so that's why you get like George Burns on the Muppet Show and what the heck's his name? Spike from the UK, Spike Milligan.
Spike Milligan.
There we go. Yeah. And that's how you get these guys. Cause there was this resurgence in popularity of these 40s and 50s comics. And so The Muppet Show just took full advantage of that.
So before we go on, we're just going to take a quick break for a promo for another ESO Network podcast.
I'm Brittany Trino.
I'm Martha Bartlett.
And this is But First, Let's Talk Nerdy. Clink.
Oh, how was that? That's going to be our promo.
Done. Cut it, Kevin. Send it.
Bam.
But First, Let's Talk Nerdy. It's two nerd girls talking about nerdy things over a couple of drinks. What could go wrong? Part of the ESO Network.
I just noticed. Okay, I'll go again. Wow, that was a great promo, Paul. Your editing skills are impeccable.
Sure sounds great, whatever it was.
And you know what? It sounded even better the first time.
Yeah, that's right. We were more enthusiastic, certainly.
Okay. So I forgot to press the record button the second time round.
That's okay. We didn't get too far.
Fortunately, Sean realized only 5 minutes in.
I saw him wagging his finger, so I was like, "Oh no, something's happened.
We got trouble."
We don't put our hands up to ask questions, do we, on the show? Right. What's Sean doing?
I think he wants to go to the toilet. Yeah. Bathroom break.
It's going to make a number one. Yeah.
Right, I got to go for a tinkle.
This is the first time we've ever had a break in our recording because we're used to going straight through with either Skype and now we've gone to Zoom. We've always had the long Zoom calls, but I think they've started putting the 40-minute limit back on the Zoom calls. So I must remember to set the...
They got
to
make money somehow.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's not as if they haven't made any money at all over the last year. It's been a hard time for them, you know. I mean, nobody's using the service. Blasted thing. Anyway, so let's go back again, as we've just said, I was remembering the Sandra Bullock episode that I thought that may have... It couldn't have been in the 80s, obviously, so it must have been in the 90s, that my wife had also remembered as well. And that, you say, Steve, that is obviously not the Muppet Show. It's something else.
Muppets Tonight, when they were trying to adjust into like the David Letterman, Jay Leno kind of format with the advent of the late night talk show or the re-advent of the late night talk show. When suddenly you have things like the Arsenio Hall show and a lot of big names in primetime doing, talk radio basically on TV. And so you get Muppets Tonight, which was a failure. But one of Jim's final appearances on TV was promoting Muppets Tonight on the Arsenio Hall show, actually. And that was one of the first big formal introductions of Clifford, who was meant to become a much bigger part of the Muppet universe as Kevin Clash was becoming more and more of a prominent figure. The guy who does Elmo was becoming more of a prominent figure, and he was supposed to sort of be the takeover for Kermit. It just, the show didn't work is what it comes down to.
Yeah, fair enough. It couldn't have been too bad because I can only remember one thing, so maybe it was that bad. But I can at least remember something from that era, along with the character of Johnny Fiamma, because straight away, as soon as they mentioned his name, I cottoned on to the fact that he was supposed to be the Frank Sinatra sort of character, if you like.
Oh, yeah.
Links to the mafia, so it's a bit he always was a crooner, and he always has these links to somebody who, you know, seemed to help him along the way.
Oh, yeah. And his monkey sidekick, Salmonella, is another one of my favorites. And it's a very Merry Muppet Christmas movie that leads to one of my favorite gags right in the opening, where it's like a gift to the Magi, where everyone's getting something for someone else, but then they traded the thing to get the other person something. And Salmonella gets Johnny Fiamma a solid gold record player. And Johnny goes, "Oh, thanks." And that's it. He doesn't return anything. It's one of my favorite bits from that, from what is overall kind of like a middling, mediocre TV special.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, I'm quite happy to go back and watch all of the 1970s episodes, you know, taking me back to my childhood. And we used to go around to my nan's house every other week. On a Sunday, have some sandwiches and things, sit down, and I'm sure the Muppets was on the TV then. We'd all sit down and watch it, and it was, you know, it was fantastic. I mean, and the reason we liked it so much is because I still remember it's one of my, you know, a memory of mine, that I sat down and first time we saw it, and my dad said, "Oh, yeah, this is good. This is made in the UK." But they're all speaking American. How can that be? I mean, I just couldn't, you know, we couldn't get that at all. They can't be made over here. They're all speaking American. How do they do that? And they said, no.
The UK wasn't stingy. Working. That's the answer.
That's right.
Lou Grade was willing to write a check.
Oh, yeah. Lou Grade passed a lot of stuff, which I liked. So, I'm watching it now, and I'm instantly taken back to, you know, to those times watching it. You cannot listen to the theme tune and not smile. I put the episode
true, that's scientifically
on.
Proven.
It is. Yeah.
We wrote it down.
Yeah. I mean, I put an episode on today. In fact, it was the Elton John episode, because I was trying to catch up on your podcast as well.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great one.
It is a good one. And I put it on, and straight away, the theme tune comes on, and my wife sort of rolled her eyes and went, "Oh, no, you're listening to the Muppets now, are you?" And we're both sitting there going, "Dun, dun," you know, and we're both, you know, bopping away to the theme tune. I thought, just a minute ago, you said, you know, you were rolling your eyes. Now you're actually, you know, into the theme tune. And then we got into the show proper, and I was listening to the podcast. You're saying that every song on that particular episode was a smash hit. It was a big record.
It's a
then.
Crazy episode to have those four songs in one episode. Is just insane.
Yeah,
just insane.
You couldn't get that now without having to pay him millions. So,
well, yeah, and that, those are the sort of rights issues that I kind of blow my mind. Like, we can't get the rights to Lullaby to Birdland, but we can get Elton John's biggest hit somehow. How does that work?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it's amazing. And I watched the Peter Sellers episode, because you did that previously, and I was looking forward to it, because I do like Peter Sellers' work. I think he's an amazing comic actor on the screen, but I do know he's a flawed genius, and he had issues obviously in his real life. And when I watched it, I cringed all the way through, because all I could see was a lot of and he's a product of his time, because he was in the back end of the Second World War, so a lot of the radio shows that he used to do were all aimed at the, you know, Germans being the bad guys type of thing.
Oh, and yeah, his German doctor kind of.
The German doctor was Dr. Strangelove. He started off with Clouseau, you know, having knives thrown at him.
I'm glad they got that one out of the way early, and then they never mentioned it again.
Well, that's right. So straight away, you're offensive to the French. You've offensive to the Germans, and then he comes on with a German helmet at the end. You think, oh my God, how is this still on the TV program?
It's true. Like, Germany isn't the easy target it used to be.
Yeah. So
they're like an industrial world leader or whatever.
But, yeah, that's right. But one thing he did, and you in all of those clips, all of those sketches that he did, he never once was himself. He was always in a character, which is pretty much the way you would expect, you know, somebody to come on the show. But what he gives away is when he's talking to, I think it was Kermit, and he was saying, there is no real Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers,
I had it surgically removed.
Surgically removed. Yeah. Exactly right. In his real life, you never saw Peter Sellers. If you watch any of his home videos, he is acting to the camera, even in home videos. And he's doing stunts and silly things and silly voices and clowning around all the time. Even when he was with people that didn't know him, he would always be in a different character. He'd be doing certain things. You very, very rarely saw him as Peter Sellers. He was a very, very strange character. And that showed up more on that episode, because you could see that the characters he was doing was just anybody. He did, if I could still use the word, a gypsy. He was singing in a gypsy camp with the violins.
The gypsy violin.
Yeah, I'm surprised they could even say that and keep that in. But, you know, that's touch and go over here now. But, you know, it's still entertaining, but it was a bit hard to watch. And yet I saw, I should have closed the list down now. Which one was it? One of the first episodes, I think it was probably episode 5, because that was the first one I saw, with the dancer who came on, and she was dancing with one of the, obviously, the full-size Muppets.
Oh, Rita Moreno, probably, where they're grabbing each other and slapping butts. Oh, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and they're throwing each other around.
Oh, no.
You reckon? That was hilarious. It was like a French restaurant, cafe type bar type place, and there was a punch up, and you know she's throwing this Muppet
breaking
around.
Glass bottles,
exactly, and smashing them over the head and all this. But the editing of that and the way they cut it, so she would pick up this obviously nobody inside it Muppet, throw him up in the ceiling, and you know, and he would hit the floor, cut straight away, and he would stand up. You know, and then the guy who's obviously in the suit, he's going to... The actual technical aspect of that of that fight sequence was fantastic. And that was... I thought that was the first episode, but obviously it was the fifth. It was... I thought, wow, they've really hit the ground running. The first, you know, within the first five episodes, it was a crazy, amazing, really fun thing to watch.
So Jim was a huge proponent of practical effects and why do something a new way when the old way is great.
Exactly. You see things like Gonzo being fired out of a cannon or out of there's an explosion and he flies off in the air and he ends up with Waldorf and Stadler in the box seats at the top there. And you can see that they've literally just thrown a puppet. They've thrown the puppet of Gonzo at the...
Jim is a firm believer, not to say that he didn't want to pioneer new effects, and the Jim Henson Company and the Creature Shop specifically pioneered all sorts of stuff, including a lot of miniaturized servos and control sort of schemes. The control schemes that allowed them to fit all the things they needed to into the doozers for Fraggle Rock were groundbreaking, and what led to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was how they figured out how to miniaturize all the servos they needed to put in that head, was because of the doozers. But Jim was a firm believer that anything that was developed, it should enhance, not replace. The goal was not to replace the Muppets. The goal was to find ways and new techniques to enhance them and to make them better, to let them do things they'd never been able to do before. That's why we get things like, you know, Muppets riding bicycles. Mm-hmm. And then a whole pack of Muppets riding bicycles later on. And you get really cool dark screen effects where it's Muppet performers in black velvet in front of a black velvet mm-hmm. background, sort of the early, you know, origins of chroma key. But that was not to replace. That was not what they went to. It was so that they could show Kermit's feet while he danced.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Jim's goal was always to enhance, not replace.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's some amazing, amazing work. I mean, even some of the simple things like having the Swedish chef or Rolf the dog, where two hands are obviously playing the piano or they're mixing something in a bowl and another person obviously doing the head. How mm-hmm. Obviously that the trust in each other that those two people must have had to act together and to know what, you know, if the head looks one way, the hands have got to go that way as well. Or if the hands go one way to pick something up, the head's got to follow it.
And that, right-handing is actually where a lot of junior puppeteers got their start, including Steve Whitmire, who went on to be Kermit. So almost most Muppets are left-handed. It's just a fact. And the reason for that is that most of their puppeteers are right-handed and they're using the mouth with the right. So by default, the left hand is the one doing the action. But because of that, with characters like Swedish Chef and Rolf, less so Swedish Chef, more so Rolf, Cookie Monster, those ones that have like the puppety hands, a lot of junior puppeteers would get their start as the right hand.
Huh.
And like that was their first assignment, to be the right hand. Or Steve Whitmire in Fraggle Rock was the back of Sprocket, the dog. Like he played the back half. You know, those sort of things. It's like where people get their start and prove that they can coordinate and prove that they can do. Another sort of starting point for a lot of the Muppeteers was doing secondary characters when the primary performer was already in the scene. So Steve Whitmire, when he joined halfway through season two of The Muppet Show, started doing Fozzie anytime Piggy and Fozzie were in a scene together because Frank Oz was going to be doing Piggy. So you couldn't do both. And so that's when you get these other puppeteers getting to step in and show their stuff as the production got more complex.
Because, I mean, the technical aspect of the ballroom dance scenes where you've got at least two people, or maybe not. I don't know. It depends on how they do it.
No, actually. Season one, it's much more clear. But in a lot of cases, it was a Muppet performer with two hands up with characters talking to each other, and they were doing both voices. Wow. Season one early, especially, you can hear that it's like Frank Oz doing both voices or Jerry Nelson doing both voices. I guess not Jerry Nelson. Or Jim doing both voices. That divvies up later, but in the early seasons, it was just one person with their hands up doing this bit.
And that's just, that's incredible. I really need to look more into the sort of behind the scenes aspect of it now that I'm a little bit older. I can understand it a bit more, but it's, technically, it's just above anything that has been before or even, you know, come after. I think it's just because it's still practical. It's not CGI or, you know, they've
right got the never legs replace, only enhance.
Exactly. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So my my favorite, if you're going to pick a favorite type of episode, and they tend to sort of come and go. Although the last one I watched did have all three, and it was anything that contained veterinarians, hospital, pigs in space, and the ballroom dancing, and as many corny dad jokes as you can fit in, will do me. Thank you very much. I don't mind the singing if there's a decent singer comes on, or if it's a good bit of acting or whatever. But the dance numbers—that's where I get a little bit lost on it because I'm not a big dance fan. But that's why. But for a long time. You know, Fuzzy Bear was my favorite character because he used to come out with all the stupid jokes and all the silly jokes and all the, you know, the
obvious one-liners.
All these punchlines failed, you know, so I mean, anything like that, if that was a failure to me, that was a damn good joke.
Sean Dan, who's your favorite Muppet? This is a test.
My favorite Muppet?
Yeah. We got Fuzzy Bear for Paul.
Yeah. It's always Kermit.
Fair. He is the linchpin that holds it all together.
He is. Now, what I want to know is how good is that Florence Henderson episode? Because you guys keep talking about it in every episode.
It's so bad. It's such a throwaway. It's not that it's bad. It's a throwaway. That could be Florence Henderson on any variety show in the 70s, and it wouldn't matter because they had so little Muppet involvement. It was such a throwaway. It just was. Now, it was not a bad episode. It just could have been any show. There was nothing Muppety about it.
Well, I'm looking forward to
her big musical number. The most Muppets were that there were butterfly puppets on little rods. Like that was her big number. Oh. That was the most Muppet involvement. Yeah, it was bad.
Well, now that it's on Disney Plus, I got to check out that episode because you guys bash it at every opportunity. So
it's bottom three. Without a doubt, it's bottom three.
Mm-hmm.
It will probably continue to be bottom three. That being said, we are coming up to the Sylvester Stallone episode, and that one's pretty bad. That one is pretty bad.
Ooh, that sounds exciting. I can't wait to hear you guys take on it.
Ooh. I just wanted to see if I can understand what he's saying. More than anything. Hey, you know, Muppets, we're going to go on stage. You know? That's right. I brought my bad impressions over from our show to yours.
I was going to say the Muppet characters will be all looking around going, who did that voice then? Who was that?
Yeah. Was that the Swedish chef? What the hell was that?
Is Sam the Eagle having a stroke? What's going on over there?
That's right.
Speaking of favorites, who's your favorite Muppet there, Steve? Oh,
man, Gonzo's always had my heart. He's always been the weirdo. Even amongst a pack of weirdos, Gonzo's the weirdo. And I've always liked that. As far as newer generation Muppets, I'm a big fan of, Rizzo, but unfortunately he's gone now because Steve Whitmire is gone now. I would doubt we really get to see much of Rizzo ever again. And like Pepe the King Prawn is just so sassy. And in a lot of, in over and over again in Muppet productions, he has like the only funny lines. Like in A Very Merry Muppet Christmas Movie and Muppet Wizard of Oz, which are both forgettable and mildly bad. Wizard of Oz is really bad. He's got the only funny moments in the entire film are because Pepe was there. For no other reason, because Pepe was there to get a laugh. Yeah, I'm not a shrimp, I'm a king prawn, okay? Like those sort of little sassy retorts is just what I look forward to from him.
Right, right, of course.
So, Steve, you said you had some sort of quiz for us.
Oh, man. Mm. Oh, boy, do I have trivia for you guys. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. So I've got five, I'll call them easier trivia questions. These five, I'm going to pit you guys against each other.
Ooh.
So if and when you know the answer, say ding, we'll call, we'll get an answer, and we'll give out points. And then for the second round, you guys are going to have to work together because I've got five expert-level questions.
Hmm.
And so if okay. even any one of you can get to them, you collectively win.
What do we win? What do we win?
Respect.
Ooh, that's my favorite.
And each of you gets to come and guest on Muppet Trek at some point. Sean, you've already done yours.
Yeah, but I can go again, which
that's
is
right.
excellent.
Got to pick a different show.
I could do that.
Because we did Babylon 5. And then we actually since then have had our second guest on. We recorded a future episode. So episode 43 will be our second guest ever.
Ooh, neat.
And he is a guy from another podcast that made me think of you, Sean, Robots versus Dinosaurs.
I haven't heard of that one.
It's a really great show. Basically the idea is that he picks a guest, has them pick a movie that features either robots or dinosaurs. They discuss it. And then at the end, they answer the question of, but does this movie prove which is better, robots or dinosaurs? And then you have to discuss the merits of Robots or Dinosaurs based off the film you just watched.
Ooh, I think I need to go on that show.
You should check it out. Awesome. See, he is very much in your wheelhouse. And we did a gem from the early 90s called Adventures in Dinosaur City, which is terribly great. Just terribly great.
Never heard of it, but I need to watch it.
Exactly. Go on YouTube. You can find it. That's the only place you can find it, actually.
Well, okay.
I don't think it made it past Laserdisc, but then that might be right up your alley too, Sean.
Yeah, I have Laserdiscs, but not that one.
All right, are you guys ready to play? We'll start with the easy ones, and then we'll switch over to Expert where you guys will work together.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. What is the name of the spaceship in Pigs in Space?
Ooh.
The USS Swinehead?
Ooh, very close. You're right on the edge. I'll give you a quarter point for that. This is old play on nerds rules where I just give out certain percentages of points.
Because the segment is called Swine Trek, Swine right?
Trek.
Yeah. That is the USS Swine Trek.
Ah. Oh, okay. Wow.
Pigs in Space. All right. What is the name of the chicken who Gonzo has an infatuation with?
Not a clue. Ooh, is it Christina?
It starts with a C. Camilla the chicken. He always had an obsession with chickens, and I don't think it was until the third season where she was like given a name, where he was given a chicken that he had an infatuation with. Because in season one or two, they had a real chicken on that did dancing that he was sort of in love with, and then various other poultry throughout, which is one of the largest reasons why early on people thought Gonzo was some sort of bird.
And I'm surprised you guys didn't get the name Camilla, since that's one of your monarchy people.
That's true. One of your monarchy people. I like the way you said that. All right. Who throws boomerang fish?
Oh.
I throw the fish away and they come
back to me.
New Zealand.
It's either in New Zealand or New Zealand. I can't remember his name now. Lou.
All right. You get a quarter point for that one, too.
Oh, God.
Right now, Paul's in the lead with half a point.
He's off.
All right. Of the original three Muppet films, which is the only one not to break the fourth wall?
That's what I fall down because I haven't seen the films.
Muppets Take Manhattan?
That is correct. Muppets Take Manhattan is the only one where there is not a wink to the fact that these are Muppets in a movie. And I'll take the minute or two to talk about this now. Muppets Take Manhattan breaks Muppet continuity incredibly. Because of the fact that they do not admit they are in a movie. So because of that, you are to accept it as canon. So in the
What?
Right, exactly. It gets really, really confusing. But in the Muppet universe, the idea is the events of the Muppet movie happened mostly. Like, they even say the Muppet movie, this is kind of how it happened, more or less. They get together. They went. They got they got their contract with Lord Grade, who was just a play on Lou Grade, for to be rich and famous. They went into the Muppet Show, which in the Muppet universe wasn't that successful. Like, in canon universe, it wasn't that successful. They stopped doing the show, and they decided to go back to college in upstate New York. We have the events of Muppets Take Manhattan, where they went back to college, made this variety show, and tried to get it on Broadway. Manhattan Melodies. So now this is where Muppet Babies breaks everything. Because the idea is that they did not know each other as babies. So the ideas of Muppet Babies are not canon. All of Muppet Babies, all 117 episodes of Muppet Babies, happens in that 3-minute dream sequence in Muppets Take Manhattan.
Wow.
All of Muppet Babies happens in that dream sequence, because that's the only way it works.
Huh.
Okay. The end of the movie ends with them getting married for real, and then a quick divorce, which in theory then leads to the events of the Muppets 2011, which then leads to Muppets Most Wanted, at the end of which they come back to the U.S. and they start Late Night Miss Piggy, which is the Muppets show that occurred. And now they're keeping each other entertained over video chat with Muppets Now. But yeah, Muppets Take Manhattan breaks canon because there is no reference to the fact that it's a movie that the Muppets are making.
The more you know.
It's all terrible. And I can tell you right now, the original Muppet writers would say, what the hell are you guys doing? Not supposed to be. What the hell? It's Muppets. All right. This is the final of the easy questions. What is the name of the Electric Mayhem's saxophone player?
Oh, no.
George. It's George.
George. It's a fair guess.
Because
George is the name of the janitor. George the janitor.
It's probably one of the questions I was going to ask you.
And these are the easy questions, you said.
These are the easy ones, guys. Oh, no.
Actually,
oh, no.
This would be better if you had asked these after we'd seen all of the episodes rather than only the first two or three.
That's true. But there, some of these are for movies and stuff, too. It's Zoot.
Oh, it is as well.
Is my axe.
Wow, Google is really quick on your computer.
My father-in-law is going to kill me. He had a band called Strange Fashion, which they completely modeled themselves on the band.
The Electric Mayhem?
Yeah, and he's the drummer, so he is animal. So everything about him is animal. And that's he's going to kill me for getting that one wrong.
There you go. Okay, well, then he's going to kill you for this next one. This is now we're on to expert, where if any of you get it, you all win. If anybody gets any of these, you all win.
Right, I'm off. Bye.
All right, got to go. What is the name of the Electric Mayhem's trumpet player?
Philharmonic.
And this was actually a trivia question on a classic episode of A Play on Nerds.
And I've listened to every episode, but I can't remember.
I was just going to say somebody lips. Yeah. Literally, somebody lips.
Somebody lips. That counts.
I knew that one of them, and I was thinking it might have been the guitar player, but because of the shape of her
Floyd.
Mouth. But oh god!
Oh, Janice.
So
he was actually added late to the game because Steve Whitmire didn't have anything to do during Electric Mayhem segments, so they added lips to give Steve Whitmire something to do.
Wow!
All right, what is the actual name of the Muppet Theater? Though often just referred to as Muppet Theater or the Muppet Theater.
I'm trying to think if I've seen it anywhere, but I don't think I have.
It is referenced in a episode in season one.
Oh, God.
Wow.
It is the Benny Vandergast Memorial Theater.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
In season one.
Nah.
And this is the episode where it's revealed. I think it's the one where J.P. Gross, who's Scooter's uncle, who now owns the theater, is basically introduced. And they talk about the old owner of the theater, Benny Vandergast. All right. Name one of the two reoccurring jug bands on The Muppet Show. Man, you guys have a lot of catching up to do on Muppet
Show. There's a lot, yeah.
I don't pay attention to the names. I just watch the show.
That's fair.
Can you do us a favor? Can you do this quiz with Jarman before your next Muppet trick?
And okay, then get
see how many questions he gets.
See how much he's actually gained?
Yeah. Yes. I like just a comparison, just to see. Yeah. Just make us feel better.
Well, yeah. No, good. He might get two of these, maybe. I might be giving him too much credit. We've got Lubbock Lou and the Jug Huggers, which are basically the jug band that was featured from season two on. And season one had the short-lived Go-Go La-La Jubilee Jug Band.
I don't remember that name at all.
So. Nope. Right. All right. Final. Oh, no. I've got two left. The Gonzo Puppet originated in what Muppet Christmas special? 1970. Oh. Wah, wah. See, these are expert for a reason.
That nice, only nerds nice like me dead now. Air there for a podcast.
Yeah.
As we all stretched our heads to think of it.
All right. Now. It is the Great Santa Claus Switch. He was called Snarl, and Gonzo was literally a head in a cigar box, which is why his original puppet looks so janky, because the only thing that was constructed was the head.
Oh, wow.
And they just found a body and constructed around it. but yeah, the original Gonzo puppet was a head in a box.
Sounds like my ex-girlfriend.
That's right. Just and called Snarl. So that's perfect.
You're still seeing her then, Sean? Every time you open the freezer.
Yeah.
The original Kermit puppet was constructed from what?
Styrofoam.
Tennis balls.
Belt.
You got tennis balls. Yes. Two cutting tennis balls with the eyes. It was Jim's mother's green spring coat that she no longer wore. So the main body of Kermit was the sleeve, and then he constructed the head on top, basically.
The reason she didn't wear it was because there was a Muppet-shaped cut out the back.
That's right. What the hell did you do to my coat? My good spring coat.
She lost it. She was flailing her arms, and he just had the idea. And he just went. And the rest was history.
That's right. Chased him across the yard. Well, those are your expert level Muppet questions.
Wow.
Now these you can break out and impress anybody if they find Muppet trivia That's impressive.
It. Fantastic.
And who doesn't?
I'll give you a heads up. No one. This comes in handy nowhere in life.
But it was very informative.
That's right. That's our goal over at A Play on Nerds. It's be informative, but you're not going to use it anywhere.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, Steve, thanks for coming on the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, Steve. We appreciate it. Listeners, make sure you check out the A Play on Nerds Podcast Network for all the episodes and shows that Steve and Jarman do. But until next time, the grease in the box is cold, and we have been your deliverers of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. Take care and have a great day. I'm not sure if that's how we ended or not, but that's how I'm doing it today. Today we've been your deliverers, so please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us, as we mentioned, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you'd like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us at cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.